to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Every Sunday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and we stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. You'd think that after doing this program for 10 years and knowing exactly when and where the program is located and all those good things, I wouldn't forget any of that. Well, you know, repetition certainly is a wonderful thing, but sometimes it kind of goes away. Nonetheless, we are glad that you are with us as I begin the process of beginning this particular program. It's going to be a good one. I think you're going to enjoy it. I think it's very timely, to say the very least. And we're going to be talking about goddess power, awakening the wisdom of the divine feminine in your life. And that includes you guys and me. I was born and raised into a family of a total of eight, myself included, five females and three males. We were outnumbered from the get-go because my parents had two girls first. Then it was me, still outnumbered. Then it was my brother, still outnumbered. And then they had two more girls. So there you go. And I would much prefer living under a matriarchal system than a patriarchal based upon, and this is just my observation, folks, how men have screwed things up over the centuries. I would think that there have been some civilizations that have been female-run and so forth that probably flourished a whole lot better than under the male. But we're also talking here about, I think, reaching a point of balance. We're going to talk about that with our guest, the author of this wonderful little book called Goddess Power. And we're going to be talking with this woman whose name is Isabella Price. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's a great pleasure to have you here and, of course, to be outnumbered by your side of the species.
Well, thank you so much, Richard, for inviting me. And I'm delighted to be on your show and chat with you.
You know, I went through 4 weeks of therapy back shortly before, about a few years before my first and only divorce, please. And I remember being asked the question by the therapist, who was a female therapist, I might add, to name off some of my friends. And the majority of the names that I listed were females, to which she said that that wasn't really right and that I had character flaws. Well, to be honest with you, more power to me. Because I guess I was just able to relate, but it didn't mean I didn't have male friends. I did, and I do to this day. It just happened that those were the names that came up at the time. I didn't know what she was asking for. Mm-hmm. But what I'm finding is that in our world over the years, and especially mm-hmm. in our lifetimes, yours and mine, we find ourselves in a rather precarious situation because nowhere else on the planet except the United States of America do we have a problem with female leadership, and because we have female leaders all over the world. Ireland's had one. Italy's had one. India's had one. I'm sure they've all had more than one, but nonetheless, I mean, they're half the population. So why shouldn't there be more representation in that regard? And especially considering, and I don't know, maybe my observation is wrong. You can help me on this, that, you know, men have been running things for a long time and look at the mess we're in, you know, and women are starting to come into their power. I mean, and honestly, and it's not in a, I'm not observing it as in a mean and vindictive and any other than a, you know, I want to play this game too, but I don't want to play it the way it's been played, whether you're talking about politics or religion or education or economy, whatever the institution you want to label, life. They want to participate. And I know some men, like myself, when I was hiring people, I'd much rather hire women. They did a better job most of the time. Talk to us about the changing woman's role, especially in regards to this whole aspect of the divine feminine in our lives?
Yes. Well, you touched on so many interesting aspects. I could literally go off on each one of them. But let me see where to start. Well, first off, of course, as you said, what we witness today in the world at large, when we, you know, look at our political institution, our economic system, and so forth, we witness the result of what I like to call the unhealthy masculine or the hyper-masculine, and of course it's been particularly played out right here in front of us in this country. And, you know, some of it also has come down to us through organized religion and you know, how women were viewed and how women were excluded from leadership position in organized religion starting, you know, roughly about, 1000 B.C., with the Abrahamic traditions, but we find it even in you know, the Eastern wisdom traditions. So what we see right now is a result, and I just want to go in a little bit deeper, you know, some of the paradigms that are an expression of what I call the unhealthy masculine or the hyper masculine are, of course, domination, control, competition thinking, conquest, and just basically authoritarian power structures that are still very much in place. Also, I would say fragmentation and this thinking of separation that, you know, I am different from you, I'm separated from you, I'm basically disconnected from everybody else, including Mother Earth, you know, our first mother. So that's why we also witness this devastation and depletion of her resources. That's part of that hyper-masculine approach and its value system. So this is what we witness right now. And of course, the good question, and you already hinted at that, is, well, how can we restore a healthier balance and integration of both, you know, the sacred in the masculine and the sacred in the feminine, which is absolutely a must at this very critical evolutionary threshold that we find ourselves as humanity. In fact, I firmly believe without addressing the missing piece of the wisdom of the divine feminine, we cannot reach psychological and spiritual wholeness as individuals and also collectively in the world at large. So I believe that this, you know, these energies or qualities of the mother hold the key for a viable and sustainable future. And of course, you know, we're hopefully going to dive in more deeply, and, you know, I'm happy to share many examples, and so hopefully our listeners will get a clearer picture. But you also mentioned something very important earlier, and that is that, you know, a lot of men always feel, well, you know, the goddess is really not for me. How could I possibly relate to her? That's for women, you know, of course. Yeah, they are into the goddess, and nothing could be further from the truth. And I'm really glad you brought this up, because it's a misconception. So basically, the goddess in her energies expresses herself in both women and men. And how does that happen, you know? Let me just give you some examples for our listeners. For example, she expresses herself through your creativity. Whatever you create, and of course, you know, you don't need to be an artist to create. Of course, there's painters, you know, poets, you know, composers, and that's all beautiful. And of course, that's part of it. But creation is, or creativity, I should say, as I understand, it goes much further. We all are creators and co-creators because we keep recreating our lives every single day with every decision we take and every, you know, action. And even in our thoughts, you know, we create our reality, our lives. So the begriff, the term creativity is all-encompassing. We truly are the creators of our own lives, our reality, as we know now, based on, you know, what quantum physics tell us, tells us, and other scientists. So this is how the energies of the divine feminine express themselves in us, as us, and through us, as Richard, as Isabella, and everybody else here on the call. And it's also our intuition. It's you know, we call it our internal guidance system, and it's basically more that which is located in our right brain hemisphere, intuition, creativity. And unfortunately, when you look at our educational system, that is not what is being fostered at all. In fact, there is such a hyper focus on left brain, like, you know, logical, rational thinking, and you know, that gets celebrated at the expense of all these equally important qualities, like, you know, creativity, playfulness, and intuition, which is absolutely key. So that's just kind of, you know, giving you a little taste of you know, what we're talking about today.
And it seems to me that there's no question that you're very passionate about this. I'm wondering if you've come across very many men who are as passionate as you are about this. And again, we're specifically speaking about the divine feminine, not the masculine. Do you find that there are men who are very, very supportive in this regard? I know that there are still a lot of men that are opposed to all of this, that there is nothing that women can do right because they're women. So I know that's there, but I'm wondering, do you see the population of men growing that are beginning to understand why this is important?
Great question, Richard. Thanks for bringing it up. Absolutely. There are men who are very tuned in energetically and psychologically to, you know, the energies and also the wisdom of, you know, the divine mother or the cosmic mother. And again, it's very important to not identify, you know, when we talk about the masculine and feminine, that we do not identify that with gender. You know, again, the divine mother's energy works through all of us regardless of that. So it's more like a quality and energy. And so we can all tap into that potential and express these energies and qualities. And so I, you know, in, let's say in those circles where I socialize, you know, let's say my meditation, you know, communities and you know, just males, you know, with whom I interact, you know, through my teachings at John F. Kennedy University, or just in general, a lot of them are very sensitive and tune in, and they acknowledge that it's really important to integrate this missing piece, because we cannot come into balance with ourselves and with everybody else, and we cannot come into alignment with the earth unless we address and incorporate that missing piece of the wisdom teachings of the divine feminine, and also energetically and psychologically within us. So I do find that there is a growing number of men who open up, who are willing, you know, to embrace her, let's put it that way. And of course, there is still resistance. But, you know, this resistance, I also understand where it's coming from. And you know, we need to hold space for everybody and understand that it's not everybody's spiritual path, the path, you know, of the divine feminine, and that needs to be respected. But I've also noticed that there are women who are also rejecting it. And you would think, like, well, why don't they embrace it? And what I personally believe, based on my experience, is that those males and females who do reject, you know, the goddess, or, you know, the energies of the divine feminine, you know, have become used to our hyper-masculine system, especially here also in the United States, where, you know, you have to compete against each other in business to make it. You have to be really tough. You cannot express your vulnerability because they feel that otherwise, you know, my competitors are taking advantage of me. And again, these are the paradigms of the unhealthy masculine. And, you know, we see it in our culture at large, and especially also in the business world. And, you know, my husband's in business. So I've really walked that path with him. And it's also rejection of a part of themselves, of something that is actually psychologically within themselves, but they are not aware of it. It's dormant. It's a quality that's just there waiting to be kindled, to awaken. And again, we're talking about tapping into your intuition, tapping more fully into your creative potential. And so it's a matter of where you are, you know, on your spiritual journey and you know, what your priorities are, because we all know this world, you know, this world of separation and, you know, competition and domination. It's doomed. We cannot continue on that path because it is self-destructive, as we all know. So, you know, we know that change is happening right now, and the change will likely accelerate this year. And I believe that it is the Divine Mother, her energy, that is the catalyst behind all the changes, behind all the chaos even, and the upheaval that we currently witness on the planet, that she's working through that. Because when you look at India, in Hinduism, you have, you know, the Divine Mother, Kali, Saraswati, Lakshmi, whatever you want to call her, and she's the activating principle. So she's the one who drives this change. She's the one who drives, you know, also cultural evolution and the evolution, you know, in terms of our awakening. She's the catalyst behind that. So we don't have such an example of the Divine Feminine in our Western culture, but I do believe that this is what's going on. And, you know, it's not necessarily pretty pictures. The birth pangs preceding transformation can be very painful. And right now, let's face it, they're excruciatingly painful. And, you know, those changes take place within us, but also within, you know, the broader culture. And a lot of fears and psychological shadow issues are coming up, all the kind of stuff that we have conveniently repressed for so long, and now it's all out of the shades, right in our face, and it's coming to the surface, and it has to, because we need to work through that, we need to process that so that we can eventually heal ourselves and then, you know, take the next evolutionary leap, which we need to do, because otherwise we are doomed. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I find it interesting that there would actually be women that would be opposed to this, and mm-hmm. then embracing individuals who have mm-hmm. not only made statements, but have been accused of misbehavior. I'm going to be kind and say misbehavior. you know, towards women, and yet they're opposed to, you know, and we're not talking about rising up here. We're not talking about a coup. We're not talking about a revolution per se, although, I don't know, maybe a female revolution might be a good thing, like I said. I mean, I've seen a few movies where Amazon women have taken over and, you know, there's a little control going on there, and it's a whole nother thing. We're not talking about that here. We're talking about, because we have to coexist. We have to work together.
Yes.
And I'm sure you're familiar with Greg Braden, and he and I have talked many times on this program in the mm-hmm. past about the there was a study done between competition and cooperation. Mm-hmm. And they measured the quantity of productivity versus the quality of productivity.
Mm-hmm.
And in competition, the quantity of productivity was, of course, very high.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to the quality of the of productivity,
mm-hmm.
very low, whereas in the cooperative mm-hmm. side, the quality was very high. And that makes to me a big difference. I used to argue with people about this over whether I should buy American or otherwise. And I would always say, I will buy what works and lasts. And if, you know, now I kind of make a differentiation there now, especially when it comes to China, because too much of what comes from China, our own regulations, which prevent lead-based paints from being used, just to start with, are being used by the Chinese on the products they're shipping over here. And that's just one small example. So, you know, I will buy what works and lasts. And if it's made in America, hey, wonderful. But, you know, you're talking about this aspect of, you know, these different aspects. And as I said before, we've talked about these on the program before. I'm wondering, too, about the spiritual aspects. I mean, when you're talking about the divine feminine here, higher self, if you will. And, of course, the majority of the stories in the majority of the philosophies and or mythology of our species, of humanity, is male-based. And I'm curious, can you tell me where we can find those myths and philosophies that are female-based?
Yes, great question. Thank you, Richard. Yes. Well, first off, let me just trace that back a little bit. You know, this patriarchal conditioning, you know, that we've been talking about, of course, is fairly new in history. As you know, it wasn't always like that. So, you know, the worship of the goddess, you know, and when she was looked upon as that creative womb, the great cosmic mother who brings forth all of life but also eventually takes it back to her, really starts in what we call the prehistoric period, or, you know, the old stone age, to simplify a bit, and that's like 25,000 years before the common era. So this is the oldest religion, just to be clear. How do we know that? Well, there's been a lot of archaeological research conducted starting in the 60s and 70s, you know, by some women pioneers, like most famously Maria Jean Butas. But what she found was basically a lot of these female figurines. Some of them were at the entrance of cave shelters where our early ancestors gathered and eventually engaged in sacred ritual, because they could watch the miracle of birth. They saw that it is woman bringing forth new life. And at that time, the survival of humanity was constantly at stake. We're talking about the time of the hunters and gatherers. So, of course, the miracle of birth was looked at with awe and wonderment. And so it's not surprising that that great mother was highly venerated at that time. And then when you move into a later period with the transition into agriculture, farming, and the domestication of animals, you still have such an abundance of you know, female figurines, goddesses that come literally in all shapes and forms, when some of them are half bird, half woman. And Maria Jean Butas calls them the bird goddess, and they date back to the 6th and 7th millennium BC. Others are snake goddesses. The snake is also a very interesting symbol. It's actually a symbol of immortality because it keeps shedding its skin periodically. And so it's not surprising, by the way, that the snake later on was demonized. You know, in Genesis, with the emergence of the Abrahamic traditions, where the snake became the tempter, and as you know, original sin comes into the world through Eve, you know, sinful first woman, and then all the women later on were looked upon as the daughters of Eve, and that's, you know, what we find, of course, in the church tradition. But again, if we go back to this prehistoric time, there is so many goddess figurines in so many shapes. And one last quick example, when you go back to the great civilizations, let's say Egypt, and you know, what is modern-day Iraq, which, you know, we may call Babylonia, going back like to the third millennium BC. The great goddesses, mother goddesses at that time, were praised in inscriptions. They were called Queen of Heaven, for example, or Sustainer of All Life, or another title was the bringer of the arts of civilization, such as, you know, pottery or weaving. Or another title, now believe it or not, was savior of the human race. And we all know that this is a title later on that, you know, Christianity adopted. It was Jesus Christ, you know, commonly viewed as the savior. But, you know, some of these titles precede Christianity and go back to, you know, these ancient great mother goddesses like Isis of Egypt or Inanna Ishtar in ancient Babylonia. And so I'm just mentioning those examples for our listeners so that they get a little bit of an idea. And interestingly enough, and to just close this, it's also that these were peace-loving societies, and you know, according to some pretty credible research, they were egalitarian societies. So there was not yet this you know, authoritarian power structure that we find later on. And when I'm talking about egalitarian society, I have to say this applies to the period before the great civilizations emerged. So we're talking about the period before 3000 BC. Egalitarian and peace-loving. But even, you know, later on there was this little island of Crete, which is in the heart of the Mediterranean, where you have what is known as the Minoan culture. And that was a culture where women were highly, highly honored. They enjoyed a very high status in society. They had like a partnership relationship with men. And they may even have had a priestess queen ruling the island, but that is somewhat controversial. But women are depicted, you know, in all those palaces that they've excavated. And it was a very peace-loving society. We know that because the palaces were not fortified. So they were not living for war. They were not a war-driven culture based on domination and conquest. And so these are all examples I'm mentioning because it ties into what we've already discussed. And just to give you perhaps, you know, a little bit more of an idea.
What I find so frustrating in regards to history, you know, and regardless of the given philosophy, especially Christianity, I am, and I worked for 15 years at a Christian radio station, and I suppose I can use the phrase, you know, I heard it all, unbelievable stuff that I heard, and it was male dominated. And the one thing I read both the Old and New Testament at least once, and I read the Gospels a number of times. And the one thing that struck me, and they would read this passage, they would read this section of one of the Gospels, and yet they would sort of gloss right over it. The resurrection of Christ and the first human being, and this is according to the Gospels, the first human being to not see, but to see and recognize who he was not any of the 12 apostles, the men.
Yes.
It was a woman.
Yes.
It was a woman. And I'm going, now, come on. What? And I have to ask you this before we take our break. If you feel that the reason why the men have dominated for so long and really worked to keep women down, whether it's preventing them from getting an education or preventing them from owning property or preventing them from doing anything,
yeah,
is not because men thought women were inferior, but because men knew that they had as good a head on their shoulders and heart in their chest as they did, the men, and they couldn't handle the competition. They felt threatened. And so the only way for them to handle this sense of, I'm going to call it an inferiority complex, is to keep women down.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting point, Richard. And, you know, I would definitely say that that probably psychologically played into the whole thing, because, you know, they could see that women, obviously, as you say, have, you know, similar talents, they're tuned in. And in fact, you know, you made a little allusion to Mary Magdalene, you know, obviously,
yeah.
You know, the first eyewitness to the resurrection. Well, here's the thing. When you do look at the non-canonical Gospels, also known as the Gnostic Gospels,
yes,
you can actually see there that she was initiated into the deepest wisdom teachings of Jesus Christ. It is mentioned several times that she was a woman who had a deeper understanding of those teachings than some of his male apostles who didn't have the luxury of having an education, like Peter, you know, was a simple fisherman. So she obviously had that privilege, and she understood his teachings on a much deeper spiritual level. And this is also something that has been completely omitted. I mean, you will never hear about that, you know, in any official sermons in mainstream Christianity. And as you said, you know, a lot of what we know now is just for centuries been literally repressed or ignored or distorted, name it for whatever. But the fact is that, talking about Jesus Christ, he was the last true friend of the female gender in Christianity. And this is what theologians pretty much agree upon, because he was all-inclusive. And we can even safely say that he likely had a circle of female apostles around him. And Mary Magdalene was the leader of these apostles, the most important one. But they had to meet in secrecy at that time because of patriarchal rules and values. Women were not allowed to gather in public. Women were not even allowed to read scripture for the reasons that you mentioned. I think that males would look at women as a threat to their power because they felt, well, what if the women take us over? I mean, I think this is a very rational fear that has played into, you know, what we see today with these patriarchal systems all over the world, and especially also here in this country.
You know, I find it interesting too. In the times in which you and I are conversing, there is a congresswoman. She's the first congresswoman and I find it fascinating that this is even news. She's the first congresswoman to be pregnant while in Congress. It's like, and I'm sorry, I mean, no disrespect to women, and oh my God, I came from a woman, and I have five other siblings who came from my mother, who I adore. But it's like saying that, you know, our first whatever nationality male congressman just went to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. But come on, what is... And I remember, too, especially after Barack Obama was elected the first time, they kept making the comment, he's our first black president.
Right.
And I remember a commentator making a wonderful comment in that regard. He said, as long as we keep speaking in those terms, the first black president, the first female president, the first female black president, or whatever, the first Puerto Rican president, whatever the case may be, we haven't come even, we haven't even crossed the threshold of the cave, as the phrase goes. That was the comment that was made. I thought that was really, really, really telling. And I have to say that when I read, and I've read the Gnostic Gospels, I have a copy of the, I think it's called the Forgotten Books of the Bible, something along those lines, the Apocryphal Gospels. And I mean, I even challenged people at the station that I was working at the time, because I said, well, wait a minute, hold on a second. You know, you're saying that this group of guys set up and decided what was going to be canonical. You know, what's a criterion? What's a criterion for putting a book in the Bible? You know, and of course, you know, they gave me a list, and of course, I even read where there was one book in the Old Testament that did not meet the criterion, but it was put in anyway, and it was the Song of Solomon, which is all about sex. But I found it fascinating that I said, well, wait a minute. You're saying that these guys, well, who set them up as the arbiters of the faith? Okay.
Right.
Who set, you know, what's the criterion to be a member of this elite class that gets to decide what goes in and what comes out? And what's the criterion for putting something in and out and on and on and on? And I just, and what's interesting too is, you know, that there is both a Catholic and a Protestant Bible. The Catholic Bible has a few more books in the Old Testament. I also made the interesting observation about the New Testament, not to get too far afield here, that apparently the people in that day just didn't get it. And the only reason why there are books between the book of Acts and the book of Revelation is because people didn't get it. Paul had to keep writing letters to these different groups of people to try to explain the structure. And I thought, you know, if the people had just gotten it, the book would be a whole lot, the total New Testament would be a whole lot shorter.
But I think you're hinting at something very important, that basically Scripture has been written by man exclusively, and literate men, they were the elite at that time, and, you know, a lot of women, of course, did not have access to education, so therefore they were illiterate, and that's how you can keep them powerless and under control and, you know, easily manipulate. It all plays into that, so the privilege of education has been fairly recent in history for women. I mean, even in the 19th century, women were not admitted to universities, just to mention that example. And then with the women's vote, you know, in the 20th century, there was a long struggle, and so we've come a long way, you know, when we look at it historically, but nevertheless there is no equality yet, and you see it with wages, you know, that men earn considerably more for the same profession. The list goes on and on, so we still have ways to go. But again, to come back to, you know, the whole thing was organized religion and patriarchal systems. I mean, when you look at early Christianity, just to briefly mention that, there was a much greater diversity at that time, and women were actually allowed to take on leadership positions in the early church. We're talking about the decades after the crucifixion, and even into the early second century, women would travel and spread the gospel, the good news. They would help to organize, you know, the new church, you know, and then systematically in the second century, there was this shift that women were increasingly displaced and not allowed to take leadership positions, and males would increasingly, you know, come in until it became a church exclusively managed by males in the third and fourth century, when Christianity became a state religion and an imperial religion rooted in the values of the Roman Empire, which were anything but loving, because we're talking here about conquest and domination.
Yeah.
But again, at the time of Jesus, also just another example, God was not looked upon as a father exclusively, you know, the sky father, separated from us, way high up in the heavens, transcendent. God was called a parent. The Aramaic word for God, Avun Bashmaya, means God as both father and mother. So we do have the aspect of the feminine face in that expression. That was during Jesus' lifetime. Aramaic, as you know, was the language he spoke. And people never know that because, of course, they've been told, well, the divine's exclusively identified with the male, you know, the father. But the divine is both genders and ultimately also goes beyond gender because, you know, how can we in our limited human minds even conceive of the divine? We have to be humble. It's a mystery in which we live and move and have our being. But what we need is the qualities, energetically speaking, of the divine feminine. We need this values, you know, the paradigms of partnership and cooperation, and that applies to gender. So with conscious men, you know, conscious women need to step it up now to make their contribution. And I see it, by the way, as a co-creation with the divine. We are all in this dance. We are all helping to manifest, to, you know, bring the new, the world that we yearn to see, you know, that's a more holistic world, more inclusive. But in order to bring this new world about, we have to step it up. We have to actively participate and contribute with our highest contribution. And that applies not just to us women, although we need to really step it up, but also we need men who support us in that endeavor. So I see it as a cooperation, a partnership. I feel that this is what the times are calling for.
Indeed. Indeed, indeed. Okay, we're going to let our folks know now that the website is, as we said before, onetruth-manypaths.com, onetruth-manypaths.com. We will be linked to it as well. We're going to continue our conversation with Isabella Price here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And of course, we are talking about this whole aspect of the divine feminine and the goddess power, awakening the wisdom of the divine feminine in your life. We ask you to stay right where you are. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And I'm Richard Dugan. I'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm here with Isabella Price, and we're talking about this whole aspect of the divine feminine in our lives, the wisdom thereof as well. Again, onetruth-manypaths.com. Please go there, check it out. Check out what she has to offer. And you know, of course, we've really gone, I don't want to say far field by any stretch of the imagination, because everything we've talked about, I think, is very, very pertinent. But you also have, what was I just looking at? I was looking at, you have a series, a book series, and now I will share this with you. I've shared this with our listeners many times as well. Many years ago, when I was actually working for the religious radio station, I had the privilege, and I consider it so, of interviewing a gentleman who was, I don't know if he was the founder, but he was the president at the time of an organization called CAMP, C-A-M-P. Christians and Muslims for Peace. This was back in the late 80s, early 90s, 90, 91, 92, something like that. I think might even been before the first Iraq war under George Sr. And he was on the program. We chatted, and he even said that Christians and Muslims have more in common than do Christians and Jews. And, of course, he was also speaking in Phoenix at the time and shared this information. He had a woman who was following him wherever he went. It was like his personal heckler. And she called the station because he had mentioned the interview that he had done with me that was recorded and that we were being used of the devil. And I thought, okay, so, you know, I passed this information on to my boss. He listened to the interview and made some stipulations because we were more of an evangelical fundamentalist radio station, which I didn't toe the party line. I want you to know that when I left, I was considered a casualty of Christian radio, and thank you very much. But I found it fascinating that even then, people were upset about all of this stuff. And I have to say that if I were of a mind to, if I were that rebellious, I suppose, or anarchistic, I'd be suing my grade school and high school for the education I didn't get in the diverse cultures that have existed on this planet as long as man has been here. We did a series in 2014 on mythology in many different subjects, whether it was science fiction, whether it was video games, whether it was sports. We were even going to do a program on the mythology of war, you know, and so forth. And my friend, who is Dr. Will Lin, who he's out of the Relativity Studios in Los Angeles, California. He and I had a great time with those 12 programs that ran once a month. And he told me, he says, you could never exhaust the subject matter. So then of course, now here we are talking with you, Isabella Price, and I'm thinking about, you know, the mythology. Now, we're not talking about the stereotypical mythology of women in our current culture, the attitudes. I'm talking about the mythology, which I believe contains fact as well. All mythology has some basis in fact. Mm-hmm. The mythology of women through history, and I actually want to go back a little bit further than that, and I want to ask you a question in regards to this thing you talked about before we went to break about the lack of education and, of course, the keeping of women down. Weren't there, though, down through history, certain women and or groups of women who at least secretly began the process of lifting themselves and their, if I may use the phrase, their sisters up by even secretly teaching them?
Yeah, that's a big question. Well, there have always been pockets of women who had the privilege to be educated. I mean, you know, again, we talked a little bit about Mary Magdalene and, you know, likely the female apostles around Jesus, but again, they had to meet in secrecy. But then during the Middle Ages, it was primarily women who came from aristocratic families, noble families, who went often also into the monasteries, which afforded them a certain freedom because they were not in a marriage. So they were not being, you know, co-opted by, you know, some patriarchal structures that would just confine them to, you know, basically what was expected traditionally, what a woman should do, and of course having children and all of that. But so they went into the monasteries where they, you know, of course were highly educated and literate. Hildegard of Bingen was an abbess. She's a great example of a very empowered, highly educated woman in the Middle Ages who even challenged the church. I mean, you know, there were several frictions between her and you know, the Pope at that time, but as you know, she was a very prolific reader and writer. I mean, she literally covered all the different domain of science at that time, incredibly knowledgeable. So it has existed throughout time, but more as pockets. And of course, now in the 20th century, where women finally got access to education, that shifted dramatically. And so, as I said, we've come a long way, but we still have ways to go. But I wanted to perhaps pick up something that you mentioned earlier. You talked about, you know, some of the movements right now that are so timely and in everybody's awareness, and that's the, you know, the Me Too movement, for example, and, you know, all these, well, these forms of abuse that have come to the forefront, and women are finally finding, you know, the courage to share their truth, to you know, show their vulnerability, and what has been hidden or covered up for so long is coming out, which is a very positive thing because there is a huge healing potential in that. And so this whole thing was, you know, abusive behavior patterns from males, I believe, has, again, deep-rooted psychological roots in some of these, you know, notions about the female body and female sexuality being, you know, sinful or being inferior to spirit. And I have to say, again, this is what has been passed down to organized religion. You know, I mentioned Eve, you know, women being the sinful daughters of Eve, and we find it in the church fathers, and as you know, it peaked in, you know, the witch craze, where women who possessed ancient wisdom, like midwives who had herbal knowledge, they were accused of witchcraft and burned at the stake. And of course, it had economic reasons. Their property was also confiscated, which made the church even wealthier. But the point here is that there has been this demonization of female sexuality and the power of the female womb. And if you really look at that, that the womb is sacred because, yeah, it has the power to give life, which is one aspect of the mother. Of course, she also then in the end takes life. She also can be the mother of death. But in this case, she has, of course, the creative life force. And that was always perceived as a trap because, you know, males don't have this potential, this possibility. And so the sexuality in the womb became desacralized and demonized over time, and woman's power was taken away because our power resides in the womb and in our creativity, which comes through the womb, you know, what we call the lower energy chakras, you know, especially our power center in the belly. And we find it today with, you know, the whole proliferation of pornography into a multi-billion dollar industry, if you really think about, and that women's bodies are not being respected, they've become sexualized and objectified. And while we can say today we're progressive, we don't burn women at the stake anymore, but all these entrenched fears and all these notions, you know, about women being somewhat not on a par with males and inferior to spirit and tainted sexuality are still in our collective psyche, in our unconscious. And I believe a lot of males who abuse women do have these patterns deeply in their unconscious, and it affects their actions, and they obviously do not respect women and are deeply disconnected from their true self, who they truly are. And I think that's why we witness this avalanche of abuses. These are deeply disconnected people, disconnected from themselves and from everybody else, and especially in this case, women. So there's clearly, you know, a contempt for women and women's bodies, women's sexuality, and it's also okay in certain cultures that male own the female body. You know, some aspects of religion have actually justified that the husband owns the body of his woman. He has certain rights. And so, I mean, you know, we could go on and on about that. I'm just giving you a few snippets, you know, given mm-hmm. the time frame that we have available here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredible what women have accomplished over the past century. It's unfortunate that they have been kept down, but I think there's a wonderful, quote, and I don't know whether it's a real quote or not. I hope that it is. It was in a performance by James Whitmore of Harry Truman in Give 'Em Hell, Harry. And the scene is he's walking with reporters down this one street, and a reporter makes a comment. Now, they don't say the comment, but Harry whips around and he says to this guy, "Wait a minute, hold it right there. I heard what you said and I don't like it. And let me tell you something. And this is in reference to what he was talking at that time. And I say that this applies in the same context with women." He said, and I paraphrase, "If there is a black man in the gutter, there has to be a white man in the gutter with him to keep him there." And I feel the same way when it comes to prisons. If there are people in prison, whether they are there rightfully or not, guess who else is a prisoner? The guards, all of the staff. Mm-hmm. They're all prisoners too.
Yep.
So from my perspective, I got enough trouble trying to free myself up from the shackles I've created in my own life, you know.
We all have.
And fortunately, I've been lucky enough to have four sisters and a mother who have called me on my stuff from time to time, that's a good thing. I want to let our listeners know also before we run out of time here that, you're quite remarkable. One of the premier scholars of women's spirituality today, our guest Isabella Price, is a professor of spirituality and comparative religions. I love that. At John F. Kennedy University in San Francisco Bay Area, and has taught at many other educational institutions, including California College of the Arts. And you're also the author of One Truth, Many Paths. It's a book series on, as we've just were alluding to, world's wisdom traditions. I love to refer many times to the ancient wisdom teachings, whether it's the Bible, the Quran, or the apocryphal scriptures, or the Bhagavad Gita, etc., etc. Also included a goddess power, Jesus Christ, the love of wisdom of the first century mystic, and in the beginning, creation myths across cultures. We did a program on creation mythology from the Islamic perspective. It was really quite fascinating. I want to, it just was just incredible, the conversation that we had there. I want to thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program. I wish we had more. And so to that end, I hope that if you should find yourself down here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation, because we didn't get to an area that I know is extremely important to converse about. I don't know if you can at least touch on it in maybe a couple of minutes before we wrap the program up, but the positive aspects and influences that we have experienced from women, if you want to keep it in the last century, you know, the 20th century or over history, and the progress that humanity has made because of women, not in spite of them, but because of them. If you could just maybe briefly, but hey, boy, if we could get you in here, or we will have you back again, I would love to continue this conversation.
Thank you so much, Richard. Oh, well, there's a lot that could be said. Perhaps let's touch on one aspect, and that is the whole environmental movement, because I feel it's so urgent right now, and there's still a lot of people not talking about that. Most environmental organizations are led by women, or at least women are very engaged, you know, in that, and also social justice movement, I mean, grassroots movement, I think, and we will see even more of that, you know, as we are going through these changes. And part of it is again that I think women really feel that urgency that it's time to take care of our first mother, the earth, you know, and that's how the Native Americans see her, because she gives abundantly. She never discriminates between you and me. Everybody can pluck an apple from the tree. You know, the earth doesn't say, oh, you are allowed to take an apple, but you are not, whereas the human mind constantly separates and divides, as we know, between us and others. So I feel that this is really something that women are passionate, and with all the depletion of our natural resources, the destruction, the species extinction, because after all, we share this beautiful planet, you know, with these precious life forms, and we have a responsibility as stewards of this planet to not allow the destruction of this earth to continue on unchecked, especially now with the current administration. It is absolutely heartbreaking for me to witness what's going on. The earth is equally sacred. The earth is part of creation. I believe that the divine energy, and in this case, the energy of the mother, is in the earth as well. It's Gaia, you know, the name of the Greek goddess. We women have to step it up now and protect our sacred earth. And, you know, that's what the Native Americans have been telling us for a long time, because they live in harmony and alignment with the earth. And when they take something from her, they give something back by doing a sacred ritual, honoring her for her gifts. And what do? You know, we poison our air and our water. So this is one area that I really felt called to share, and where we women are very involved and engaged, and I think we have to get even more engaged in that area in the near future.
Couldn't agree more. We're fast approaching the end of our program, but I have three final questions for you, and then we're going to let you go. And again, we will have you back, because again, this is something that we need to continue talking about. First question I have for you, and again, my thanks to you for so much time, is...
Oh, thank you.
Who is Isabella Price?
Well, I would say she's, well, spirit in a human body. Loving awareness and presence. And the same applies to you, Richard, and to everybody else who listens in on this conversation. We all are that.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, I mean, in the end, we'll see, you know, where that journey will take me, but I'm here to serve. Primarily to serve this, let's call it higher cosmic intelligence, you know, God as Father, God as Mother, and beyond all concepts. I'm here to serve and to do this in alignment with my highest purpose. And this is the journey I'm on. I feel very passionate about my work, what I'm doing, and I intend to continue this journey, and nothing and nobody can stop me from doing that. I'm very dedicated and committed to that.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Oh, that's a big question. Oh, God, and I have to answer it in how many seconds? 10? Well, I think one of the things that comes to my mind right away is helping to hopefully establish a healthier balance and integration of both the masculine and the feminine qualities on this planet, so that I believe this is what we need to do to take the next evolutionary leap. And I believe it's the key to a viable and sustainable future. And of course, there's millions of people on this planet who do the great work. This is just my modest little piece in that broader cosmic tapestry. But I believe that every contribution counts ultimately. And if one is not made, this is going to be the missing piece in that great cosmic tapestry. So I'm committed to contribute with my, you know, humble little piece here in the broader tapestry.
Wonderful. Goddess Power is the book. Isabella Price is my guest, and we thank you again. Also, go to One Truth Many Paths. That's OneTruth-ManyPaths.com. And again, we thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.